Hi, it's Dave. Today, Tesla closed at an all-time high, $1,025 per share. And many Tesla shareholders are just in bewilderment of what happened. It's amazing. The stock market has bounced back to all-time highs. And Tesla broke through all-time highs today. In today's video, I'm going to share my latest thoughts on what's going on. All right, today I'm recording outside. My RV is getting upgraded with solar and lithium batteries, and also my computer is also broken and is getting fixed right now. So I'm out here in the park with my camera. So today I wanna share 10 different thoughts that I have, and these are just kind of random, out of the box, kind of thoughts and different angles about Tesla and the stock markets today. All right, so the first thought I have is first, I think Tesla is benefiting from the overall market at large. You see, the market has entered into some kind of euphoria of sorts, and people are believing in this V-shaped recovery. And a lot of people are skeptical, thinking that, hey, this isn't sustainable and the market is irrational. However, there does seem to be some legitimacy to this, and I think it's not an either-or, and it's still going to be up to time for us to figure out if this is really going to be a V-shaped recovery or not. For those who are advocating and who are believing in a V-shaped recovery, they look at certain industries like travel and hospitality, hotels, etc., and they look at that as kind of like a exception, right? So there are certain industries and certain sectors that are being hit, and it's going to take a good 2, 3, 4 years for these industries to recover. However, people are looking at that as more the exception, and the vast majority of industries out there, they're looking for them to recover quite fast and to recover and for them to recover quickly back to their normal kind of economic activity before the whole pandemic situation. So this is kind of the mentality that's going on in the market, and this mentality has helped Tesla to recover from, you know, when it broke under 400 just a few months ago, back now over all-time highs, and now it broke $1,000. All right, number two, the Fed has lowered the value of money by their quantitative easing program, and this is impacting Tesla and the stock market. So what does this mean? That if you look at the Fed, it's expanded its balance sheet from $4 trillion to $7 trillion just in a period of a few months. Now, if you look at that magnitude of spending, $3 trillion, right, just in a period of like a couple months, has really flooded the market with this additional liquidity and capital. Not just that, the government at large, the federal government, has decided, right, to spend extra $2 trillion in the past couple months as well, because of this pandemic. So you have an additional $5 trillion that have been generated and released kind of into the market, into the economy. And this has created kind of a lot of liquidity. And this is one of the reasons why I think a lot of the stock market has bounced back, because a lot of companies that might be on the verge of bankruptcy, they've been able to find funding, they've been able to find loans because liquidity is ample. Now, a few other things. With interest rates also being so low, and the Fed driving the interest rates so low, now you have, and with quantitative easing, you have effectively the value of money has gone down over the past few months. So because you can't get much interest rates, and because there's been a flood of capital, now people are flocking to places where they can get a decent return on their equity or on their capital. If you look at bonds, because the interest rate environment is so low, and because of the additional liquidity in the markets, people aren't attracted to bonds in the bond market. And there are just not that many kind of safe places, or let's say relatively safe places, where you can grow your money, and equities has become kind of one of those kind of safe haven markets. All right, number three. This is another thought. So a lot of these thoughts are just kind of like stream of conscience thoughts. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. They're just some things I'm thinking about and how I'm viewing this current situation. So number three, there could be kind of a global flight to US stocks, to the US equity markets. And the reason being is because there's more uncertainty in actually other countries in the world, because they don't have the strength, let's say, of the Fed, of the ability to print money, of, let's say, the strongest companies in the world. Because of the added uncertainty in other countries in the world, a lot of these investors might actually be putting their money into more of the US equity market. And because of that, you can see kind of a strengthening, right, of the US equity markets, and especially the big kind of tech companies and the companies that are growing in this time of pandemic. All right, number four. The Fed has set the bottom and we're going to find out where the top is. Now, what I mean by this is, on I think it was March 23rd or so, the Fed came out and announced that they were going to have an unlimited quantitative easing program. They would do whatever it would take. And that marked the exact bottom of the market. It was about 18,500 for the Dow. And from that day, the market has risen consistently over time. And what the Fed did was it marked the bottom. It said, hey, we're going to prop up the market. We're going to do everything we can to sustain the economy. And because of that, the market and investors basically decided to go into, right, invest with the Fed, and now it stopped the momentum from going down. Now, the stock market a lot of times kind of acts like fire, and with fire, you kind of have momentum, and it goes in one direction until that momentum is stopped, and then it will go in the other direction until that momentum is stopped. So what the Fed did with unlimited QE was to stop the momentum down, and now it's been going up, right? And so we're going to start to see eventually where is that top, right? Where is that momentum ending and how far it can go. All right, number five. This is another thought kind of out in the blue I've been thinking about, is there seems to be a battle between the severity of the economic downturn that we're in and that we will face versus the resilience of human activity and human economic activity. Now, what I mean by this is it's a reality that, yes, we're in a major downturn, we're in a recession, and this recession is unprecedented in the amount and the severity and the sharpness of this downturn. And there's going to be very few people who are going to argue that, hey, yeah, the economy is going to take some time to recover fully. And what that time frame is, people can debate. However, on the other side of the spectrum, there is this belief and this ideology of the resilience of human activity and human economic activity, meaning the ability of humans to go out, to buy stuff, right? To go to the market, to play, right? To interact and to build the economy, to start a business and to take over. For example, let's say, you know, the local market or supermarket or shopping mall has empty spaces. The resilience of man, the resilience of humans in our economic age is that there will be another tenant to come in with some type of idea to sell or to market. And so with these two opposing kind of ideologies or forces, you have the severity of the economic downturn versus the resilience, right, of human economic activity to bounce back. And that's what you kind of got going on right now. If you listen to people speculating on the markets, kind of sharing their ideas, it's usually a debate between these two things, right? You have some people who are pessimistic about the severity of the economic downturn, and then you'll have some other people who are very optimistic about the resilience, right, of human economic activity to bounce back and for the economy to recover. All right, thought number six. What do I do when I think Tesla is overvalued? Okay, so there are times where Tesla can skyrocket, and you know, this is probably one of those times. Tesla's over $1,000 and their market cap is what, $190 billion. What I've done in the past, and back in like 2013, 2014, I kind of laid out a 5 or 6 year trajectory in terms of my projections and estimates. And what I did was I worked out kind of what I thought were fair multiples based upon kind of Tesla's revenues and operating margins, especially if they didn't reinvest, let's say, all their money back into the future. And I took that and I created a chart, and I created what I thought was super low stock price, medium stock price, high stock price, and super high stock prices. So there are five categories. And I did that for every quarter from 2014 to 2020. So I had this spreadsheet going on. And that did a few things to me. First, it kind of showed me my expectations that there would be a wide swing of stock prices, a stock price for Tesla, and that would be normal because, A, the stock price is based upon investor sentiment, and that sentiment can radically change, right, the value of a company because of the multiples that the companies that the investors are willing to give. And so, for example, back in 2014, my 2020 kind of, let's say, Q1, Q2 kind of stock price estimates was a super high stock price of about a little over 1,000, and a high stock price about, I think, about 850 or something, 900, and medium stock price is about I think it was about 700 or so, and it had a low stock price and a super low stock price. And so for me, for Tesla to get to 1,000 here in 2020, it's not completely kind of mind-boggling, or I'm not completely surprised in some ways, because I had already kind of charted that, right, and estimated that that was a spectrum going forward. And also, Tesla's fundamentals can change over time. I think over time, Tesla getting into the whole robotaxi autonomous software business has changed the fundamental outlook for Tesla, not just as a car company, but now it's becoming not just an energy company, but now a software and a transportation as a service company. For me, I might use some of the market segments or market kind of sentiment changes. I might do some light trading. I have a kind of a trading account that I might do some trading. But my vast majority of my holdings are kind of long-term holdings that I don't really trade off of. I just keep, because I'm looking at Tesla more as a generational company, as a generational opportunity. A company that comes along that has such a superior product, it infiltrates culture and society and economy in such a way where it becomes so pervasive where it's just easy to keep track, right, of that company, like an Apple, like an Amazon, like a Google. And I think that with a generational company, it's a unique company, unique opportunity, where you're kind of betting on the company's ability to innovate and extend their lead, but not just innovate, but go into new markets and kind of surprise you on what they're able to do. For example, like an Amazon getting into Amazon Web Services, or like for like a Google getting into YouTube. There are many examples of this. With Tesla being so-called overvalued, I don't really look at it as overvalued. I look at it as there's a spectrum, right, of different prices, of market cap prices that the investor and market sentiment will give a company over time, and that changes and fluctuates. And I'm okay actually to hold, because I'm expecting actually that type of volatility. All right, number seven thought. Timing isn't as easy as it sounds. Now, a lot of people would say, hey, you know, it wouldn't be great to time the market and sell at 900 and then buy again at 380 and then sell again at 1,000. And I remember, back when Tesla was like 800 or 900, and as the whole pandemic was rolling out, there were a lot of people who were saying, and then Tesla was like 700 and 600, and a lot of people were saying, hey, sell, and you buy back later. But then when it goes down later, and let's say the factory shuts down, you're too scared to buy back because there's more risk involved. And so you don't buy back as many shares as you had before when it's at 400, because there's greater risk, right? And there's greater fear as well. And so when it starts to bounce back and now it goes up to 600-700, now you're kind of with less shares and now you don't know what to do, right? I had a friend who had 2,000 shares of Tesla recently, and he was holding for a long time actually, and he sold half of those 1,000 shares at under $400 recently, a few months ago, because he had the thought that he was going to buy in later, right, cheaper than 400. And now Tesla's bounced back, and now what does that person do, right? It's hard to buy back, right, the shares, because now they're at 1,000, and will he ever experience the opportunity to buy back those shares lower than 400, right? That's a tough one. All right, thought number eight. It's paper gains, but still it's quite amazing. Yeah, most of my shares were purchased in 2012 and 2013. I have kind of a cost basis of most of my shares, probably about, I would say 70%, 60-70% of my shares, their cost basis are actually $30, right, per share. And I bought them over a several month period in 2012 and also 2013. And when I think about the gains on those shares, I mean, we're talking about a 30x gain, right? And it's 2020, so in 8 years to see a 30x gain, right? And sure, there are paper gains, and if I sell, I'll need to pay taxes. I'm in California, it's gonna be high taxes. I'm not really looking to just sell, you know, many of my Tesla shares. I kind of have a gradual selling plan where I sell, you know, a small percentage every year, and I try to look for other investment opportunities. But to look at that and to say, hey, how did that happen? How did I come across an opportunity that was a 30x gain? And I think a lot of it was trying to find the essence of investing, or trying not just to follow the market, or trying to follow what other people are doing. Back Yeah, in 2007, I spent a whole year trying to develop an investment philosophy for myself. And I was reading all sorts of books and getting into things. And I started to see, hey, so much of the investing industry is focused on trying to just beat the market, or the market is the standard. And I realized that there are people who can exceedingly beat the market, and they kind of set their own trend, right? And they're not necessarily focused on everyone else's returns, right? They're going for something else. And that's when I started to realize that for me personally, if I wanted to get into investing, this was back in 2007, I wanted an investment philosophy that just wasn't reactive, right? And wasn't just trying to follow what the masses were doing or conventional wisdom was teaching. But I wanted to get to the essence of what kind of investing could be. And for me, that kind of centered investing into innovation, investing into disruption, investing into companies that really are the big winners over time, right? They really take over and dominate huge markets. All right, thought number 9. Tesla is now the most valuable automaker in the world. Tesla now has a market cap of $190 billion, right? That's amazing. It's almost $200 billion. Toyota Motors, as of today, I think their market cap was about max $183 billion. So Tesla has now eclipsed Toyota as the most valuable automaker in the entire world. And this is just truly amazing. And how do I make sense of this? Well, think about it. Tesla's trying to sell 500,000 cars this year, and still up in there if they're able to do it. Toyota sold 10.7 million cars in 2019, their own record, right? So Toyota is selling 20 times the amount of cars that Tesla is. Yet Tesla is valued more than Toyota, right? And this is actually quite amazing. And a lot of skeptics and bears will point to that and say, hey, yeah, isn't Tesla overvalued? Hey, who knows? Yeah, maybe Tesla temporarily, short term, in the next, I don't know how many months or time period, yeah, maybe it is priced a bit high. But I think there is a case to be made that Tesla has a different margin structure than a lot of these other companies, meaning a lot of the auto industry is a low margin business. But with Tesla moving into software and moving into autonomous driving technology, their margins are likely going to be increased as they solve this autonomous driving problem. Further, Tesla is one of these companies that can create new industries, right? They have the whole energy industry, right? With storage, but also solar roofs and solar tiles. And Tesla can also create kind of a whole new transportation as a service industry, a robotaxi industry, but also a shipping industry. There are many different types of industries that Tesla can get into over time. Not only that, Tesla is yet to come up with a true kind of economy car, right? A $25,000 car that could sell literally millions and millions of units. So Tesla is still in their early stages of their growth. And because of that, it doesn't completely make sense to say, hey, just because Toyota sold, right, 20 times more, that Tesla is overvalued. I'll probably do another video on this because I think we need to break down the numbers and kind of show what Tesla could be valued at depending on how many units they sold, what their margins are going to look like, what kind of industries they get to. All right, my last thought, number 10, is generational companies are often misunderstood, right? It's not often that a company comes along and is truly like an innovative, like a 0.1%, top 0.1% company in terms of innovation. And those companies are rare. And when they come along, they can really disrupt big industries. And they can surprise people in terms of how much revenue over time and how much profit over time, right, they can have, they can accrue. A lot of times, though, in the beginning, right, they're kind of ridiculed, they're mocked, they're seen as overvalued. But the biggest misunderstanding or misconception on these companies is on their innovation ability. A lot of people look at these big winners early on and they minimize their ability to innovate, right? They're not really experts on really how to analyze a company's ability to innovate. A lot of the criticisms against Tesla are that, they're an auto company. But with that type of thinking, right, it's like it's almost as if you're valuing Tesla through numbers and spreadsheets rather than really looking at the essence of their technology and how they're going to monetize that technology over time. But I understand, because there's a danger. A lot of times companies will kind of go up and they'll fail. You know, their stock price goes up for a while and there's all this hype, but they never live up to that hype, right? So there's a lot of examples of companies that have dramatic, right, falls and failures. And that's part of investing, right, is trying to discern which companies are going to be the big winners and which companies aren't. For me, a lot of it comes down to trying to center around the health of the company and the product superiority of the company. How does this company innovate? How far superior is their product than other products from other companies? And can they defend that product superiority or over time? For me, that's more important than actually the stock price. I think a lot of people get kind of sidetracked by looking at the stock price getting high and down with the ups and downs. And when it gets high, they're tempted to sell. For me, it's more like, hey, is this a generational company? If it is, and they're truly going to innovate and go into more industries than people even expect or realize, then hey, I'm able to write out the ups and downs because I have a different perspective, a different angle of things. Anyways, hope you enjoyed this video. Please like it if it's been helpful. Please subscribe to my channel if you haven't. We're looking at investment topics from different angles, not just from kind of a shallow type of surface level, not just trying to follow the herd or go through some type of emotional type of, you know, thing here. My next video, I was able to test drive a Model Y today and a Audi Q5, right? Back to back, and I'm going to be sharing my thoughts comparing the Audi Q5 and the Tesla Model 3 in my next video. Anyways, hope to see you again, and have a great day. Thanks.